Chapter 1. We have had occasion before now to reflect how often democracies have been overthrown by the desire for some other type of government. How often monarchies and oligarchies have been swept away by movements of the people. How often would-be despots have fallen in their turn, some at the outset by one stroke, while whose who have maintained their rule forever, so brief a season are looked upon with wonder as marvels of sagacity and success. The same lesson, we had little doubt, was to be learnt from the family. The household might be great or small. Even the master of a few could hardly count on the obedience of his little flock. And so, one idea leading to another, we came to shape our reflections thus. Drovers may certainly be called the rulers of their cattle, and horse breeders the rulers of their studs. All horsemen, in short, may reasonably consider the governors of the animals they guard. If then we were to believe the evidence of our senses, was it not obvious that flocks and herds were more ready to obey their keepers than men their rulers? Watch the cattle wending their way wherever their herdsmen guide them. See them grazing in the pastures where they are sent and abstaining from forbidden grounds, the fruit of their own bodies they yield to their master to use as he thinks best. Nor have we ever seen one flock among them all combining against their guardian, either to disobey him or to refuse him the absolute control of their produce. On the contrary, they are more apt to show hostility against other animals than against the owner who derives advantage from them. But with man, the rule is converse. Men unite against none so readily as against those whom they see attempting to rule over them. As long as, therefore, we have followed these reflections, we could not but conclude that man is by nature fitted to govern all creatures, except his fellow man. But when we came to realize the character of Cyrus the Persian, we were led to change of mind. Here is a man, we said, who won himself obedience from thousands of his fellows, from cities and tribes innumerable. We must ask ourselves whether the government of men is, after all, an impossible or even a difficult task, provided one set about it in the right way. Cyrus, we know, found the readiest obedience in his subjects, though some of them dwelt at a distance which it would take days and months to traverse. And among them were men who had never set eyes on him, and for the matter of that, could never hope to do so, and yet they were willing to obey him. Cyrus did indeed eclipse all other monarchs before or since, and I include not only those who have inherited their power, but those who have won empire by their own exertions. How far he surpassed them all may be felt if we remember that no Scythian, although the Scythians are reckoned by their myriads, has never succeeded in dominating a foreign nation. Indeed, the Scythian would be well content could he but keep his government unbroken over his own tribe and people. The same is true of the Thracians and the Illyrians, and indeed of all of the nations within our ken. In Europe, at any rate, their condition is even now one of independence, and of such separation as would be permanent. Now, this was the state in which Cyrus found the tribes and people of Asia when, at the head of a small Persian force, he started on his career. The Medes and the Hyrcanians accepted his leadership willingly, but it was through conquest that he won Syria, Assyria, Arabia, Cappadocia, and the two Phrygias, Lydia, Caria, Phoenicia, and Babylonia. Then he established his rule over the Bactrians, the Indians, and Cilicians over the Sakians, the Paphlagonians and the Magadidians over a host of other tribes, that the very names of which defy the memory of the chronicler. And last of all, he brought the Hellenes in Asia beneath his sway, and by a descent on the seaboard, Cyprus and Egypt also. It is obvious that among his congeries of nations few, if any could have spoken the same language as himself or understood one another, but nonetheless, Cyrus was able to penetrate that vast extent of country by the sheer terror of his personality that the inhabitants were prostrate before him. Not one of them dared lift hand against him, and yet he was able, at the same time, to inspire them all with so deep a desire to please him and win his favor that all they asked was to be guided by his judgment and his alone. Thus, he knit to himself a complex of nationalities so vast that it would have taxed a man's endurance merely to traverse his empire in any one direction, east or west, or south or north, from the palace which was its center. For ourselves, considering his title to our admiration proved, we set ourselves to inquire what his parentage might have been and his natural parts, and how he was trained and brought up to attain so high a pitch of excellence in the government of men, and all we could learn from others about him or felt we might infer for ourselves, we will here endeavor to set forth.